Welcome to the NatureBack podcast, where we are talking about climate change and the green economy. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today I'm speaking with the founders of a company called 100TM, Alberto and Jaime. Welcome to NatureBack, Alberto and Jaime.
Thank you for having us, Tarmo.
You guys are coming from the company called 100,000 Million. Sounds like, you know, a lot of zeros at least. Tell us what you guys are doing.
Definitely. I'll start, Jaime, if you don't mind. So our idea is to create sustainable cities around the world. So it's not just one city. And the reason that we believe we need to do this is because sustainable cities should exist. And it's hard to name one that exists today. They might have some aspects of being sustainable, but to think of a fully sustainable society somewhere, it doesn't really exist. So our goal is to build sustainable cities because we have the proven technology. We're not trying to put or create the new way of doing something. This is all stuff we have from 10, 20 years ago that we can use. And then we have, more importantly, the collective knowledge, right? So people are coming together and noticing that these issues are important for the world. And this is something that we need to do. Now, why do we build cities? And the important thing about saying the city is it's a sustainable city that is built from scratch. So our land, you can see the picture of it on our website. There is nothing there other than water and a lot of sun and a lot of wind, which then immediately it allows us to try to achieve our goals of consuming one third of water, one third of energy, compared to a city like Helsinki, which is it's believed to be very sustainable and very efficient in some way. So not the only one. I know the rest of the world everybody has their own favorite, but we think Helsinki is a very good benchmark for us to set our goal on. And yeah, that's what we're doing in a nutshell. Of course, the vision of the company is to trigger a change in the way people build the new cities, because we can't continue to build them around the current grids, because that's inherently why they can't be sustainable, right? They're connected to old sources of resources or dirty sources, I guess I could say, to an extent. And we believe that disconnecting with the use of renewables, we can do this, right? And if we, our vision is to change the way companies go about doing that. And in the short term, our mission is to create a lifestyle that is truly human-centered, nature focused, and of course sustainable. So in a matter of 2-3 generations, people won't have to have conversations like the ones we're having today, which are like, how do we become sustainable? What it is to be sustainable? What's the 1.5 lifestyle? It's like, no, these people will, if we do it right, it'll be just like, you know, like the way you and I opened the water faucet today, water comes out, you know, and it should be natural and they shouldn't be thinking about that. They should be thinking about the issues that we should have as a society in that future, right? So our goal is for kids to live in a better world. And we might expire by the time this all comes through fruition, right? But we think and we believe that this is what we should be doing, right? Given our past experiences and there, I don't know, I'm speaking on behalf of Jaime here, but there's nothing better that we could be doing. Like, no offense to everybody else that is doing a bunch of great stuff, but for us, it's like, this is the thing we need to do. Because even if we fail, we'll prove that this is doable to an extent, and then it'll allow other people to continue. So, and it's not that we're shooting to fail, but you know, that it's something that we want to do because it's for the better of many, not just a couple of people.
Mm. Where will be the first, you know, truly sustainable city built from scratch? I mean, Alberto, you are in Helsinki, so is it on one of those islands which will be built between Tallinn and Helsinki in the sea, or
no, not Not quite, but I'll let Jaime explain. He's more acquainted with the land. He actually was just there. So,
yes, thank you. The first one, we plan to build it in Chile. Not only, I mean, of course, I'm from Chile, so there's a obvious connection there. But the origin from my side of the idea that came to be the company we have now started when I was looking at some certain parts of Chile, in the northern Chile, where I believe I knew, and then I backed that up with numbers, that the availability of sun and wind at the same place is really high, one of the best combinations in the world. And in front of the ocean, in a temperate climate, would be the ideal place to build a really sustainable city for two reasons. One, of course, the availability of renewable energy sources. And the second one is the temperate climate. So you don't need a lot of energy to cool down in summer or to heat up the places in winter. And even further than that, I mean, if using the right technologies that are very well known in the Nordics, like the wood construction and well-used insulation, it might not even be necessary to use active cooling or heating in that place. And also, that region of Chile, it has been very impacted by climate change and drought. So the local companies, big and small companies, and the local authorities are very well aware that this kind of project is very needed in that place. And currently, the economy is being impacted by the lack of alternatives on how to build, how to do some urban development in some parts of that region, close to where we're building the city. There are some urban developments that have been stopped because the water utility doesn't have enough water to provide. One example.
Yeah, and then the other thing you may want to mention, Jaime, is why a country like Chile and where it is in its development could help us create the scalability that we're looking for when we say we're not building one city.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I forgot that. Yeah, another reason is that Chile is a small country where the impacts of such a project can be better measured and noticed by the people and the companies and the government. But also, as Alberto was mentioning, Chile is a middle-income country, which makes a good case for having the first city. Because if we do it in Silicon Valley, where Alberto's from, or Finland, or another well-developed country or region, then the question will always be, well, will it work in some place where there's not big amounts of money nearby, or where philanthropy is not a factor? Well, Chile makes it's a good place for that. If it works there, it can scale up in many other places around the world, not just in rich countries.
Mm. You mentioned the kind of the stable climate in the region, but at the same time also climate change having impact. I mean, is the stable mm-hmm. climate looking forward? Is it about to stay like that, or how much does the climate change having an impact on the region?
Good point. Thankfully, I had done my research there, so I can answer the question like yes. I mean, the projections of climate change are not going to change the temperature there significantly, although the drought is already being noticed. But I have never been asked this question before. Good question. I mean, in the all the talks and meetings we've had the past two years.
How far is the project? You said that you're already building or construction has started.
Not yet. Okay. So at the stage, and then we'll get to why not, but at mm-hmm. the stage that we're at right now is doing the government permits. So the land is, because it's so far out, we have to change the permit from, change the land use permit, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a process that takes anywhere from 8 to 12 months. And then we're also doing environmental studies. that have to be done. This is just standard, but important for us. And also studies to ensure that the amount of water is going to, that is in the land, it can be used. And you know, we don't degrade the environment, and we can sustain the society that we're envisioning there. The estimate is 20,000 people for our city. We only have 450 hectares, so those are secured. And we intend to start building in 2024. You know, permits and all these procedures haven't gone through. We think we have the right support on the mindset of governments, not to say that we have any preference from them, but they believe this is important for the country. So and many other countries are seeing this, right? We often get asked by other people in the governments that that we should go to their country and do it because they drastically need it. Portugal is one example. The reason why those 12 months seem okay for us is because the important and the critical aspects of building the city is not building the city, but building the community. And that is really hard and exciting, because nobody has the answer, and it's not like somebody's trying to be the cowboy and save the day, because there is no cowboy for this one. We can only come up with it if we collectively figure out what it is that the future generations will most likely succeed with by trying to design it today without thinking about what we did before, mm-hmm. right? So this is really like trying to imagine that there's no past, although we're trying to use the proven technology, but imagine that we don't want to make the same mistakes. Now, not everything is a mistake, but how do we actually make that even possible, right? Because there's some things that we may need to do. I'm not saying that we want to use cement in the city, but you know, logic says that because it's a highly seismic area, there's some things that we're gonna have to look into deep, right, and decide. And we may have to use some sort of concrete, right, for example. But anyway, going back to the community, that is really, really the hard questions these days. And what we've tried to do with that is there's three areas that we're working on. One is we started an online community because we think that we'll get a more diverse input. So we have a Discord where people can join and chat. And of course, we have like 450 accounts there. Nobody is doxed per se. It's just an account. And we have the typical, you know, 10% that are here and there, and then the five that actually are with you all the time, right? They join our spaces and things like this. But we've been learning because of the people that they introduce us to, right? The second part that we've done in a real, not an online world, is we've done labs where we talk about the future of communities. And Jaime can talk about it a little bit in a second. And then the third one is where we mix these two, where we bring these labs that Jaime is going to talk about in a second and try to bring it to the online community. And I say online community, but I'm really talking about the Web3 community, right? Because we have some ideas of leveraging blockchain for the city once it's functioning, of course, but there's also some things around NFTs beforehand that we're thinking of, but equally important, but prior to that, is we're trying to figure out what these communities look like, and the labs that Jaime is going to explain are pretty interesting. So Jaime,
please.
Sure. Well, in a nutshell, the labs are a certain kind of hands-on workshop that are designed around the Futures Literacy Framework, and which is an approach that understands the future as the narrative that we build ourselves and we use to make decisions in the present. This is a different way of understanding the future compared to the usual Western approach, where the future is something we can predict. It's something that is coming. In Spanish, it's porvenir. That what is coming. And so we focus ourselves in predicting the future to get there first, colonize it, and win. A very cartoonish way of saying it, but yeah. But if we want, but that contrast, that predictive way of thinking about the future is completely different to our desires. I mean, we want the future to be different, not just a consequence of the past. And this is important. For example, if I thought or I wish that China would be the next superpower, then I should put my kids today in a school that teaches Mandarin. And in many of our decisions are based on the narratives we tell ourselves about the future. And also these narratives influence the way people think about what they can do in cities and how they can build or how they can gather the collective power to do something different. And so in these labs, we bring a diverse group of people, business people, people from the local community, expert like architects, sociologists, authorities. And in a very well-designed setting, they begin to play with the future in different ways. And it serves two purposes. One, and as a intended gift to the people that attend our workshops, is they learn how to understand better the way they use the future. It's empowering because it gives you a more clear view of what your agency is, you know, in a very profound way. But in the second, purpose is for us to get a deeper understanding of what it means to build a community for the people that attend our workshops. And when you can relate to this, but when you're talking about the future of something that matters to you, education, health, your kids, your family, your neighborhood, and you're in a conversation that feels honest to you in a well-defined setting as I'm telling, then people reveal their deepest held assumptions, their fears, their hopes. And that's a precious element for us to incorporate in the design of our city. In a way, what we're doing while we do the permits and while we integrate the different technologies into the to understand the possibilities of what we can build, what we're doing is flipping the script. We're beginning with the values of the people that will eventually build the community, or not just the local community, but the global community of people that are aligned with what we're doing, and then design the city, given all the constraints and possibilities that are set by the technologies and the environment, of course. But we're definitely trying to and will avoid the mistake of building a huge thing that is technically correct, but no one wants to live there, which has happened in the world before.
Many times.
Many times, yes.
Interesting. The kind of the community aspect in building a city, it's something which probably people from outside the sphere don't really think that much about. If you talk about we're going to build a sustainable city, it's not probably the first question coming to people's mind is, but where do the people come from? And what will they be doing there? I mean, what will they be doing there is probably still coming to the forthcoming, but, you know, where will the people come from?
Yeah, that's a question we get often. So there's the evident answer that there is a housing crisis around the world. You don't feel it in Estonia, maybe, and not sure. Apologies, I'm not fully aware, but definitely not in Finland, right? Or we don't feel it that big here. But the rest of the world, it's crazy. Even in places like Silicon Valley, right, where there are homes, but maybe people can't even afford them. So it's a different type of crisis. But the rest of the world, there's a deficit. Like we don't have enough homes for the people that are here. And plus, we'll have another 2.5 billion coming in to cities in the next 30 years. So that's the answer, you know, high level. The specific answer to the local first city in Chile, we are about 400 kilometers away from, and maybe 60 kilometers away from two sizable cities that we feel that people from those cities will could potentially migrate. There's also the digital nomad community, right? That could potentially come in. Of course, we would have to work with the government to get visas and those residencies for people that are coming in. And we're looking at Estonia to their e-residency program. So that was magnificent. I mean, flat out top of the world, right? And if we can help learn from Estonians how to take that over to a city and convince the government, you know, that could open doors real quick. Now, 20,000 people, that's we're estimating families of four. That's not a lot of people, right? So we think we might have the problem where we're oversubscribed. Then here it gets a little bit tricky, because we don't want to do an unhumane thing to do it where you build a city and the people that build your city are left behind because they're just builders, right? It's quite the opposite. We have to think about everybody because, you know, if anything, they're the maybe not the founders of the city, but they're the foundation fathers of the city, right? They're going to be building these things. And not to criticize Brasilia, but they had a very big issue where they didn't even include those people. And that by itself is one way to enhance your society, right? Maybe initially they're building, but eventually they could potentially be the people that know the city the best because they built there, right? So we think that we have to consider from that level to the digital nomads. Some people ask me, like, it's not going to be a city for rich people. I'm like, well, no, it can't be, right? Because it's the world and it's not ours and it shouldn't be for the top percent. It should be for everybody. Now, what I am looking for is that person that's going to see this opportunity and sees, hey, I want to be the owner of XYZ so I can be the super, you know, the supermarket guy or the lady of the city. And then and those people are going to be the ones that are going to trigger these economies that right now it's hard to ask and say, how do you build an economy from zero, from scratch, right? Those are tricky. Now, we've also had people from Finland that have ties to Chile that have already said that they want to participate. Of course, because we don't have a home to sell, we don't want to give them a false promise that, you know, they can buy a home when we haven't even designed it. So we have them in our back pocket, let's say, or very close by. We've also seen companies that want to diversify into Latin America, and they're saying, okay, well, if I can be in a fully sustainable city, my carbon offset is, you know, right there, right? It's I'll be living it if I'm in it. And we see that as a business, by the way, because we should be able to participate in the carbon offset market, just because the whole city is sustainable, right? So those are the areas that we're looking at. And then there's two things that we think that are leaps that people will take for their families, because, you know, we don't want a city of only guys, let's say, right, workers or whatever, because, you know, that's not going to survive. It's going to be a hotel or something, right? But we need families. And then in what we've thought about hard is what we've been seeing here in the Nordics and the education systems, the focus on education, and the support that you can get from a properly arranged health system. Those are two things that if I tell anybody in those regions that I can offer them a city where we're going to strive to get those two things to be the core, you will listen to me. If you have kids, it'll be very simple. You'll be like, tell me more, right? It definitely, maybe from here to there, it might be a little bit trickier, but even from Mexico to there, you might think about it. You might be like, wait, okay, it's a whole new environment. I can offer my kids a future generational, not just the next, you know, my kid right now, but his kids and his kids to think about and look in a different world. But only if you grab me by those, we think, those two things, I will start listening to you. Now, that's not the end of all, right? We have to figure out businesses. We have to figure out incentives. We have to figure out how to work with the government. We're not a B2G company. But we think, based on the conversations that Jaime had, that soon we'll have to have a B2G person in the team that helps, because once we can prove that we can do this, which we will, right? It's just a matter of time and money and engineering, and a lot of thought process for the community. We see that governments are going to ask us to, initially Chile, they're going to ask us to do this elsewhere, right? Because not that we're trying to change the climate migration, but we could impact it as a secondary product just by being able to build cities closer to the people that are migrating. Not so they don't migrate, but what if you can offer a better life in your home country, and you can actually not move because you could have a job that is, you know, your ideal job, but it's remote and it's there. Or perhaps the new industries that we're going to develop there might be something that people wanted, and it's better their hometown. Then you don't end up moving away, right? Again, with 20,000 people, we're not going to change migration. But if we, you know, if we change the way the people start to build, people will start to build them closer. And the idea is to give them the whole, not building the city. That's the easy part. Figuring out how to get different cultures and communities to create, and every time it'll be different, but at least we can provide the framework on which we believe that this will allow them, right? And this involves how you design the city, so you invite for diversity, you invite for inclusion, openness, and all these other things, right?
You said that basically it's 450 hectares and planned for 20,000 people. But what if it becomes really popular and it needs to grow? I mean, by yes. nature, cities are really kind of growing organisms in a way, almost.
Right. So there's two things we're doing there. One, and I'm sorry, people came behind me. Can you hear them or? We're good. The main thing that we're doing there is two things. One, funds to get the lands that are next to it, the current land. That's important so we can secure the way the city grows. But more importantly, the way this we design the let's say the neighborhoods, and think about it from a technological perspective. So if we build the microgrids in a modular way, as well as the water system in a modular way, that it'll organically you can expand it. And that'll be kind of the way that we drive this growth in the city, right? So we can replicate it easily. And this will allow us to do this in other countries as well. But initially, we'll figure out how to make sure the city grows in a modular way. And we think that with the land that we have there, there could be up to 200,000 people is what we estimate with the 2,000 hectares around us.
The contrast, in a way, to your hometown of Mexico is quite drastic. I was just the other day hearing somebody explaining to me how the center of Mexico is kind of going downwards 30 centimeters each year, which means that the grid constructions and everything like this is always at stretch. So, you know, building in contrast to a sustainable city, it's like two different worlds.
Oh, completely, yes. And by the way, I'm not from the center of the city. That's I'm from the northwest. it's fine. It's I love Mexico City, but it is, you know, it has its problem. And it, not only there, right? I mean, Jakarta's underwater. Cairo can't handle it, so they're redoing a Cairo. We wish we would have started this, you know, 10 years earlier so we could have built the new Cairo version of it in a better way. Although, you know, it's easy to criticize from far away, but I'm sure they're doing their best. But yeah, it is a contrast. And that's the real challenge, right? The vision is to change how to do this. And then people ask us, what are you going to do with the current cities? Well, we're not going to go for them because it's really hard to retrofit. But we feel that if we, you know, achieve our vision, these cities will be decompressed from the population because people will have other places to go. And so that's kind of what we're going for. Of course, we'll learn more as we go forward.
Jaime, you were earlier speaking a little bit about the kind of the beginning of the process, but tell us a little bit more. What was the kind of the starting point?
Well, in my background, I'm an electronics engineer, and I worked for almost 10 years for the Chilean government at the National Council of Innovation. And that gave me a privileged position to work on global challenges like water scarcity, resilience to natural disasters, sustainable mining. Chile's a mining country. And talk to experts in Chile and around the world that were looking at these issues in a holistic way. I mean, with a lot of technical depth, but also understanding the connections between the socio-technical challenges that are that underlie all those issues. And so after I told you about the land, then I began to do some research about the cost of the technologies and the performance that can be achieved. And at the first, like a back of the envelope calculations at the beginning, it looked like that it could work. I mean, it could work in a very fantastic way. I mean, the numbers were good, the costs were really low, because. And then as when after we started talking to Alberto and others, and then we got the chance to come to Finland and make it happen. But the core of it is that it works not just because of their technologies available, but because, and this is the key equation here, is that the cost of development can be significantly lower than in current cities, because we're now trapped in a loop where the urban expansion revolves around cities. And that means that it revolves around the expansion of the grids, the water and electricity and sewage grids. And when the grids expand, the land around the cities become more expensive until the grids reach those land, and then typically, in around the world, and this is something that surprised me, that it's fairly similar. The final cost of the land when you do an urban development is between around 15% of the total cost of the final project. So for a city of 20,000 people, doing numbers in different countries, it could be like between 1.2, 1.5 billion euros, the whole city when it's built. So the land would be around 300 million euros. But with this, what we're doing, we can target land that is not around cities. And that makes it lot less. And that gives you a buffer that is more than enough to compensate any additional cost that you might have, because there are in reality there are none, because or very few. Because the technologies are now cost effective. Solar panels, water recycling, you name it. Black water treatment that do not require sewage, but you can do some natural processes that made to work for that. So you save money in infrastructure by consuming one third of the water, one third of the energy. So you need less infrastructure for water and energy. And the land costs so much cheaper. So. And they made sense. Business Finland liked it. They gave us the opportunity to get the residence visa, and here we are.
So the next year, starting the building in Chile, I think Alberto said that you guys have already had inquiries from other countries. What could be the destination of the second sustainable town?
Well, there are some places. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say the ones that we've had interactions with are Italy. We've heard from Portugal and also South Africa. So those are three that immediately. Of course, my home country is also an alternative because I should be able to know people around there. But yeah, that's kind of where we're going. Not my California, although I've had some friends to ask me to do it just for a couple of people from California, but then I'm like, no, because that can't be replicated around the world. but anyway, that's our plan.
Sounds really, really interesting. And I love the kind of the digital element of the community building that probably resonates with a lot of people who are listening to this podcast and with a lot of people around the world.
Yes, no, it's very interesting because we were not thinking about the digital world because we didn't know about it, right? But we met a good friend, Gleb, from this, you know, from the past, and he introduced us. And the moment that we started getting engaged, what we found is that there's a really interesting community online. It's almost like a community that you want in real life, but it's only online, where people don't even know each other, but they support each other. And I've seen this through NFT artists, right, mainly. And I know not everybody's like that, but I saw something that was really interesting, and that's what prompted us to say, you know what, we could start the community beforehand. So we're going with that, and what we're going to do is eventually have these labs for both in person and online. But in the meantime, we're rethinking how we enter the let's say the NFT world, because we believe that there's not a PFP solution for us, because we don't see that as the end goal. Just to make, to raise funds with that. But what we really think is that people will want an NFT that has actual utility in a real city. But as we get more formalized with the city is when we can actually start to offer things. And because, you know, everybody's watching crypto more closely, we can't just go off and say, oh, we'll give you this and that. So we're trying to be very careful to ensure that we actually walk the talk that we say on the utility, and then so this is what we're crafting during the next months. And if anybody in this forum is interested in that, just our website has the links to the Discord, and we're not excessively active, but it's because we're people that are new to this, but we also want to focus on getting the city right. So we actually have a platform for everybody.
Yeah, it's fascinating how you build a kind of city, which is in essence an analog product, the real houses and real streets and real street signs, and using a digital community to kind of build the city in a way. So combining the two is a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
And also, there's an important connection between the digital community and the possibilities of this off-the-grid cities that can be basically built, as Alberto mentioned, in different places. So there, the connectivity is key. And when a digital asset of the region we're building for city is that the fiber optic backbone infrastructure is one of the best in the world, because that region has in 5 years is going to have like 50% of the optical astronomy capacity of the whole world. So the observatory is so big and they're close together that the fiber optic backbone it's sending petabytes of data to the US and Europe every day. Now we just connect to that, and we will get one of the best connectivities in the world.
What's the reason for that? Is there some subsea cables coming to land there, or?
The reason for, because of the observatories, the cables the sky that is connected to the solar energy availability, because the skies in the northern Chile are one of the clearest skies in the world. Over 300 in inland, over 300 nights of clear skies per year.
Yeah, I think many of the listeners will be signing up to join the community and move in soon when the city is becoming ready Sounds like a plan. I will have to talk with my wife at home tonight about this.
Definitely. And Jaime, you want to talk a little bit about our March plan, or I know it's not an open invitation, but you know, we definitely would like to have a couple of people there. We can't open it up to 100, but you know, if there's a couple of interested people, we are having an event in Chile and we will be visiting the land later this year. So if people are interested, they can reach out to us through the community, and you know, of course, Tarmo, you're welcome to join us. Maybe we do a podcast from there, because that'll be epic, I think.
It'll be epic, especially before anything has happened. That would be totally epic. A bit like tunnel project between Finland and Estonia, all these mm-hmm. kind of free events, because nothing has yet happened, but it has been talked about heavily for the last 5 years. So I think there have been pictures of the initiators with a shovel starting to dig the tunnel, but they don't have any permits yet or anything like that. So nothing has happened. But with the infrastructure projects, sometimes things take time. So that's totally natural.
Of course, yeah. We're in agreement with that.
Good. Thanks, guys. I think it's a good point to wrap up the discussion. Otherwise, and for the listeners, it's, you know, easy to go to your website. It's 100tm.com or what's the...
.earth.
.earth.
100tm, okay. Yeah. So 100, the number, 100tm.earth.
So this planet. Find the Discord channel from there and join it and get the feedback and join Jaime and Alberto and the team at the ground in March already to go and check out the future city, which yet to be built. Good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tarmo.
Have a great one.
Miles, are you ready to record our promo for Season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that Season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger.
Electric Acid.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where, through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric Acid.